So a couple things, and maybe I miscommunicated or misheard. I went ahead and reached out to those clients on Friday. They didn't become clients on Friday, although I was hoping for your input before that call. So I did appreciate that, you know, I think I mentioned this maybe in my email to you, you know, from years ago in the car business, you know, it's either me, the money, or the machine, right? It's one of those three things, right? They don't buy, it's either me, the money, or the machine. So I just gave them a follow-up call, and I said that in a little more eloquent way, but just said, you know, I've realized that, you know, if client, we, you know, we don't win everybody's business, and appreciate the opportunity to get your business, but also we're not a good fit for everybody, you know? And so it seemed, I was kind of surprised your answer because it seemed like a good relational fit, but maybe I misperceived something. Do you feel like there's a good relational fit? He said, yeah, I think it's a good relational fit. And I said, okay. So then sometimes if people don't become clients, sometimes it's, you know, maybe our process or investment philosophy, maybe we don't agree in our best philosophy. Do you not like our process, or is there anything that you disagree with me philosophy wise? And he said, no, not really. And then, I said, so sometimes I find that it then becomes a money issue, that either clients don't really realize what they're really paying now. And so because we're an RIA firm, you know, it seems sometimes like a lot, but in a lot of cases, they're paying us much more than what they would pay us. And he said, well, it's really three things. One, and this is a good lesson for me. He said, one, you know, we're in the advice business, but I need to remember not to give advice until people pay me for advice, right? So he said, when we came in, you know, for the in-person meeting, he said, there's really three things. He said, you know, you live kind of far away. It's a couple hours from us over there. You know, it kind of took all day to come over there and come back. And then he said, I told you I want to give my business to my son, but you seemed adamant that I need to sell it to him, and I don't want to sell it to him. I want to give it to him. And then your fees were a little higher than we anticipated. And so it was really kind of a combination of those three things. So I was able to back up and I said, you know, well, first of all, I certainly apologize if I offended you or miscommunicated you in any way. That wasn't my intent. And I certainly wasn't saying you shouldn't give your business to your son. But based on what you told me about your son's situation and your situation, I was just kind of giving you some ideas on some ways you could structure the transfer. But I said, you know, my job as an advisor is to give you like options, and then whatever options you decide to go with, it's no problem for me. I mean, I never like, you got to do it this way or it's the highway kind of thing. So I think that helped kind of reset the bar there. And he was like, oh, okay. Well, I've kind of, you know, so I guess there was a miscommunication there. And then two, he said, well, we just visited with the other advisor, and he said, he showed us we only paid $1,300 last year. And I said, well, that's not entirely true. I said, you're paying about $7,500 a year now. If you have this other $300,000 with him, you'll be paying about $16,500 a year all in. And he said, well, unless he lied to me, he just showed me. We only paid $1,300. So I just use the analogy because he's a builder about the three different ways you can build a house. You know, if you did three different bids on a house, right? And one was a fixed cost house all in, you said it's going to be $500,000 to build the house. But you don't show the client what your fee is. They just know it's $500,000. I said, you could bid the same house on a cost plus basis where it's cost plus 10 or 15%. But you and I both know that it's not really cost plus 10 or 15%. It's the retail cost plus any discounts you've negotiated with your suppliers because you're charging the client retail on the products and you're getting a cost wholesale. Plus you're charging for your managerial oversight and labor. So it's really cost plus cost plus cost plus cost. And let's say that house costs $475 for the same house. But then a third way is you could tell the client, look, I'm going to make a fixed fee or a specific fee on this project. My fee is $75,000. And you get the wholesale prices on all the materials that I would negotiate to get. And you get the wholesale prices on all of the laborers and the subs or anything else. And there's no markup or manager. It's just a fixed cost, $75,000. And if I do it that way, it's $375 for the materials and it's $75 for my fee. So your net cost is $450. I'm like, so they're doing the first way, you know, or even the second way and telling you're only paying the small fee. But in reality, you're paying more than what they're showing you, you know. And he goes, well, that makes sense. And so I just said, hey, it's my fault. I should have taken the time to do a truth in fees exercise with you. And I didn't do that. And that's my fault. I apologize. Please forgive me. I said, if this is the end of our relationship and you don't want to move forward in any way, it's no problem. There's no charge. I really appreciate you. But on the other hand, if you want me to do some more work for you so that you at least know how much you're paying, you know, and what it costs, I'm happy to do that for you. And he said, well, that does change some things. You know, there's some other things I hadn't thought about. Blah, blah, blah. So he said, well, let me think about it over the weekend and I'll get back to you. So that's kind of how we left it. I think the good, whether they become clients or not, I think the good reminder for me is one, I need to do that truth and fees exercise for every person before we go over our fees so that we're comparing apples to apples because, you know, sometimes after you've been in business, well, you just assume everybody knows, but they don't. And then also is a good reminder for me to listen more, talk less, and that when people say, this is what I want to do, to just say, hey, we can help you with that.
Yeah, I want a red car. You know, what kind of seats would you like with that red car?
Right.
Rather than, I've got two blue ones over here.
Right. So, I haven't heard from him today, but it's only Monday. That was Friday. I was thinking Fridays are generally good days to follow with people. Do you think I should follow up with him this Friday and just say, hey, I want to circle back to you and see what your thoughts were?
Yeah, I think you did a remarkable job. I think that, you know, one of the things that teaches us in selling, one of the things that I try and encourage people to do is to not just accept no.
Right.
Right? No means I need to know more. K-N-O-W,
that's right.
Remember?
Sure. Zig Ziglar? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Our friend from Dallas.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what you did was you needed clarification, which gave you an opportunity to represent yourself, which was great. And I think you can go back with that same attitude. Just so we're clear, regardless of what you decide, you know, how do you feel about the presentation that I did? Was there something about that that offended you or you felt as though wasn't in your best interest? And he'll be like, no, that was, you know, what you're saying is, look, all I'm looking for is feedback. Like you said,
yeah.
Sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't.
Right.
But it's important for both of us that we understand what it is that we were trying to communicate. And as my friend, Larry Wilson used to say, the natural result of communication is misunderstanding.
For sure.
Okay.
And being married certainly teaches you that on a daily basis.
But I think what you did was great because it showed a lot of courage. It's very easy. I will admit that I kind of fell into the trap of, you know, Preston, you know, you said he said no. Why are we doing this? You know, not knowing that you were going to go back and explore the possibilities that there was a misunderstanding and just clarify things. So I think what you did was very good selling skills. I liked your presentation. It's either me, my philosophy, or it's money, you know, the process or money. I think that made it easy for him to then go, which is it? What was it that? So we both you know, generally it's always money.
Generally is.
But by putting the other two out there and you getting a no, No, it wasn't that. It was a little bit of that, but he didn't think you listened to him. That was good. That was very good. And then the third one was money. And you know that the idea of especially being a contractor, they know how to present things, right? Here's the actual all-in cost to you. People can, you know, everybody, an interior decorator said, I don't charge anything, right?
To do the markup on all the retail furniture you buy.
Right. And so you're buying all kinds of furniture and she's making a pile of money.
Right.
Or she charges you just for the retail, just for the interior, just for her advice and guidance. You know, you're going to pay one. It's like leasing versus buying, right?
Yeah.
Everybody says, well, it's only costing me this much a month. Yeah. Guaranteed for whatever, 3 years.
Right.
Pretty good deal. And the price, your actual price you're paying for the car is significantly higher than if you'd have negotiated it. Or maybe it isn't. But you don't even know what you paid for the car.
Right. Until the balloon comes due, yeah.
Right. Till the balloon comes due. So I think you did it in a really good way. I like to think of it as, you know, I've got a, you know, my team would love to know, rather than just, this is not my ego that's talking. You know, for the education of my team and for the future understanding, I'd love to clarify a couple of things. I'm not hammering you. This is just a training exercise, right? And that way you get into a non-hostile and conversation that allows both of you to express what you really think happened. And then you realize that just like in those old telephone conversations, you know, what you hear is not often what you was said.
Right.
And so you, but I think by just doing that, you went back to, you know, there's a possibility that I could get better.
And
a lot of people do not want to visit that.
Hey, that's when the moment you stop learning or stop being teachable, that's when you're in trouble. For sure.
Yeah.
So we're adding a marketing, we have a marketing person, but we're adding someone to take care of that on a 20-hour week basis. So she's going to be coming on board February 1st. The other virtual staff member team that I've talked about, we just had a conference call earlier today, went over that. So they're coming on board February 1st. So I feel good about that and that relationship. One of the things I could really use your help with is maybe taking some time to help me better define each person's role, but also maybe even help flush out or identify the things that each member is good at and then allocating those appropriately. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. I mean, one of the things to do is to, you know, go back to the 5-star model and say, okay, these are the roles and responsibilities that I have to get done in order to be an effective team.
Right. So
star number one is director of planning. And that incorporates all the process of planning, analysis, and closing the plan. All right. Separate role is director of implementation. That is the person that's in charge of implementing the plan, which means all products and services, and making sure that we don't just sell a book or a process. We help the client by being the quarterback to make sure we get the ball across the finish line, right? We complete the plan. And that, I think, is a big selling point, Preston, and you're good at that, is that these are the areas that came out of the financial plan that you should have done for you. These are the areas that you want to get done. We'll get those done first because the others aren't going to cause you catastrophic problems. But we're going to revisit the others that you are not as inclined to do because, frankly, I think you need it. Okay?
Right.
So the director of implementation is also in charge of, there's a marketing aspect to that. And that is the 24-month calendar. What are we going to do for the next 24 months to implement across the board in our 12-4-2 model? So we're going to batch process some products and services so that we're not selling one of this and one of that and one of this and one of that, right?
Yeah, and we're doing that. And that's helping. We're doing that.
Right. So then there's the training aspect that comes with that. So it's training on product knowledge, skills, selling skills, features and benefits, managing objections, just the stuff we talked about today. Okay. And if you're the only salesman, it's simple, but I just want to think about that role. Director of implementation is the person that's in charge of the client experience, 12-4-2. And then the person's in charge of rapid response to problems. They probably should be two separate people. If you don't have the staff, it's one person. But the idea is one's an operations manager and the other one is a communications marketing kind of interacting with the client person, setting up appointments and running the calendar and all that. And then director of marketing plays off of the 24-month calendar where possible and turns those 24-month calendar items into selling opportunities, marketing opportunities. Because whenever you're, for example, let's say you're doing some type of risk management, right? Where you're selling long-term care or you're selling something that's going to reduce the client's possible risk. You, whenever you do that, you're always going to have situations where people go, you know, my brother needs this. Right? And you can use it as a way, if it's appropriate, as a way of marketing to different parts of your communities by doing a webinar or by doing an in-person meeting or whatever. And then there's things that you do that you naturally do that if you did more of them, you'd bring in more business. Okay. So, you know, that would be things like, church events, dinners, you know, your community dinners, your community involvement, things that you just do, but you're very effective at. Getting somebody to put it on a calendar and push you to do more of them. I've got people that, you know, they take somebody to lunch every day and they're just really good at it. They just, if they're out there, they're bringing in business. If they're not, they're not, you know, and then other people have no interest in that, but they're good at something else. So, you know, that's the marketing person examining where the business is coming from and then trying to get you to repeat the behavior that made that happen so that you do more of it. And there can be some marketing things in there or just some personal on the ground coaching that can, personal trainer kind of things, accountability stuff. And then director of leadership is the person that runs the show and makes sure that you're keeping track of the numbers, the scoreboard, and that every member of the team is doing their individual jobs. There really aren't any other things that need to get done. They all should fit into that. And the question is, how much can you delegate away from you so that you don't actually even have to think about it versus you holding it all in your head and holding everybody accountable all the time for it? I mean, just think about it. If you never had to hold anybody accountable, wouldn't that be nice? And they all did their jobs without any supervision.
Yes, it would be nice. It'd be wonderful.
And that just doesn't always happen, but you as the leader have to give enough line to let them see if they'll be able to do that or they have an interest in doing that.
Okay.
That's really important. I'm one that basically, here, you got it. I'm not going to even check on you until I realize that you're not doing it. Now, I am checking up on them, right? I'm watching them. But they think they're now in charge. And I got my little spy game going on, but they don't know much about that. So that leads to people, if you hire well, that leads to people really feeling as though they own it rather than being an employee. Right?
Right.
So that's the outline. What doesn't fit into that, or what challenges do you see that, you know?
I think that some of the challenges is like helping my wife, Shelly, help better define. I think I know some things she's really good at, but she has a tendency to take on other things. And also she has a tendency to she's not a good delegator. Her natural tendency is, it's just quicker for me to just do it, which leads to big problems because then all of a sudden she gets overwhelmed. And then it's like, well, if you would have taught someone else how to do this, then, you know, it's like, well, have so-and-so. Well, they don't know how to do this. Well, have so-and-so. Well, they don't have to. Well, that's your responsibility to teach them how to do this so that you don't have to.
Okay. So responsibility is different.
Yeah.
Then doing something, can you phrase it in a different way that would make it more of a challenge than that's your responsibility?
Yeah, and maybe it's a poor choice of words. And I'm sure I've used those poor choice of words.
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah. There is. And I think that she's coming on board, as I've told her, some of the people I want to bring on board and the why behind there. Because one of the things that she's really, really good at is and that she enjoys, is she's better at big projects, right? She's better at creating workflows and things like that, or adjusting workflows. She's really good at that. And that helps everything else go smoothly. And I want to free up more time and energy for her to focus on those things, because then she's in her flame, not her wick, right? Or wax, so to speak. You know, she's in her flame. And so, yeah. So, you know, the thing that I have to share with her is to say, like, look, you basically, everybody has to be trained where, you know, Shelly, if something happens to you, they can do anything, everything. And she did do a good job last week with helping Zan with something. And Zan was like, well, and she goes, Zan, we have to set this up, the process and stuff, so that if you and I both get, you know, run over, killed in a car crash, that someone else could just step right in and do all these roles and they'd know how to do them because we've documented, we have processes and procedures. One of the things that I've always noticed and taken note of early in life is that there's one commonality that all successful businesses, and that's even true for nonprofits, but businesses, whether profitable or nonprofits, they all have processes and procedures and they're all scalable and repeatable, right? So processes and procedures that can be repeatable and they're scalable as the company grows so that they can. If they don't have those things, it's a disaster.
And there's one really, really important thing. is the idea of servant leadership.
Oh, I completely agree.
And part of servant leadership is that doing something for somebody else does nothing to develop that person.
Right.
Okay. So Larry Wilson used to say, managers get work done through people.
Uh-huh.
But leaders get people done through work.
Right.
So if her primary job was to develop those people so that they would know it and be more confident in what they do, and they could do the entire job, if she was measured on that, wouldn't that be better than just being measured on getting the work done?
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Okay, so that's what...
What was the other thing you said? You said you don't, through servant leadership, you don't something by doing, I was trying to how you phrase that, by doing it for them. I can't remember how you said that.
So you got to trust them. And you got to challenge them.
Yeah.
You got to support them. And you got to let them fail. And then you got to let them, and then you catch them doing things right. And congratulate them and build up their confidence. It isn't by doing the job for them. Because you can do it faster. Of course you can do it faster. Now some people just, that you're, I might be talking Swahili to them when I talk about this.
Right.
They just, my secretary, nothing. There was nothing there. Okay. She had no use. She frankly had no use for other people. She was a great secretary, most efficient person I ever worked with. But if I'd go away for 2 weeks, when I came back, oh my God, the repair job I have to do. So I would put my admin manager in charge, and I said, if Marianne gets on her high horse, please intercede. Cause she would just, people were afraid of her. She would just smash them. So she was great when I was there, and you know, somebody else was there, but man, she could go off.
He had a love-hate relationship. She loved, he loved her. She
both,
loved
we both loved each other and worked together for like 30 years, but
yeah,
it was, I would have to just take her aside and go, Marianne, you can't talk to the FAs like that. You know, I know it gets here. Yeah, they make me crazy. Yeah, they can't even do this. They won't even. I said, Marianne, they pay the bills. Okay. They're the ones that we work for. All right. They're my people. They're my colleagues, friends. I need them. Can't make them mad. I mean, okay. I promise. And then that trouble. She'd be good when I was there. Anyway, so that's, just understand that. And I was willing to tolerate that.
Right.
Because I was there most of the time.
Right.
And we kind of came to a decision, you know, she kind of learned and got better. And it wasn't bad. But, so that's what you know, can you always have leaders? No.
Right.
So you got to decide, I got a leader here or I don't. They can do this or they can't.
Okay.
So you kind of have to think about that. But the ideal thing is everybody's a servant leader. They're there for the purpose of helping others and to make a difference in their lives. And in the end, leave a legacy of value to the earth.
Okay.
So if you, that's what you want. That's what you want from every person is every day they make the life better of the people around them. So how did we do today in helping others? You know. And it takes a little more time. You gotta be patient. But the payoff is tremendous.
For sure.
And so that's all. You just have to instill that in them. Okay. That ability to trust people and believe in them and see more in them than they see in themselves and all that. And fire them when they don't do it. That's all. There's no more to it. That's it. If you don't fire them, then you gotta keep working till they get those people in those slots that are perfect. There's no perfect people. So it's closer. Never accepting mediocrity. Although I clearly did accept, but there was nobody better in the world than getting work done. She could run the whole office without me.
Yeah. As a client once said to me, if I could figure out a business that didn't require any client, any customers, or any employees, it would be a lot of fun.
That was Marianne. But man, she could literally run the whole office without me. Yeah. In fact, she could run the whole region.
Wow.
I had 14 states. I don't know, 65 offices or something, and she could run the whole thing. Administratively.
Right, administratively, yeah, without the finesse.
And she was a secretary, but yeah. Smart as a whip.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a matter of delegating. I basically could delegate the whole thing to her I knew there was no interpersonal skills involved here. So all the work, but so I would do all the interpersonal skills.
Yes, that makes sense. Okay. I mean, I think I'm clear with the 5-star model. I think we're implementing that. I just need to get more clarity on, Shelly, you're responsible for these things. Maybe not responsible. That's the right word. Have a better clearly define who's doing what, I guess.
Yeah, give them the titles. Give them the roles. Say, right. You're the director of marketing. Wow.
And I think I've done a good job of that.
Yeah.
Given the right roles. Okay. I think that's the main thing. I agree with everything you said about the roles. I just need to get more clear on how to help with that. And then I guess when you get a moment, you can just respond to my email if you get a second on that. And then it seemed like there was something else that we were going to talk about, but I mean, overall things were going well. I was a little disappointed. I mean, again, do you think it's appropriate that I, give a little more time, not call it today? Like the people that gave me the feedback is to maybe wait till this Friday. Do you agree that I should wait or should I call today?
Well, people's memory lapses the longer you wait.
Right. So call today.
Yeah. Just get it over with.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Move on and move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there used to be guys would decide that they were going to leave me, right, and go to another firm. And right. What I found was if I talked them into staying,
yeah,
eventually they'd leave.
Yeah,
they made up their mind, and then they were going to reinforce that with every single thing that ever happened between now and then. And it was better that if they decided that it wasn't going to work, that I help them pack, shake their hand, warmly send them off out, right?
Yeah, I found that. I've talked a couple of different employees out a couple of times, and then ultimately they later come back and say that I've decided, okay. So, and I've just decided if they say that, I just say like, hey, thank you so much. I had a client one time, she said that when they would come and give 2 weeks notice, she would say, thank you so much. We're going to go ahead and pay for the next 2 weeks and cash you out today. They would just go cash them out today and here's your next 2 weeks pay time off to find your next job or do whatever transition.
Yeah. I mean, that was me. I would There was no 2 weeks.
Yeah.
No, there was no 2 weeks. And,
it's a little different for each industry.
Yeah. I mean, if I really thought somebody was making a decision based on bad information, then I would certainly want to clarify it. But I think you've clearly made it clear, you know. So what you want to do is see if he understood what it was that you said and that it continued to make sense and it worked on him to the point where he's going to be able to make a new decision. But if he's got something else in his head where he just can't get his arms wrapped around it, then you wish him well and move on because you can spend too much time thinking
about it. Yeah, yeah. So you think the call should just be like, hey, this is Preston. We had a conversation on Friday. Just want to make sure we're on the same page that you would start there. Like, hey, that, you know, you feel good about the relationship. You feel good about our process and you need more information about comparing their fees to our fees. And what
right. I just wanted to see if you reflected on the reality of the pricing model.
Yeah.
That our pricing model is really very reasonable based on the amount of work that we do and the actual dollars that you'll pay. And remember, it only takes one good decision to make up for a lot of money. You know, we hire a contractor here, and it's not a question of whether anything's going to go wrong. It's going to go wrong.
Yeah, it's just a matter of what and how big. Yeah, how much it's going to cost.
If he's a contractor, you say that. Look, you know, they put in the wrong floor upstairs in the kitchen. They put in a different wood. And then when it stained, it just was wrong. They had to tear it up and start it. He tore it up and started. But the stain they used was different than the stain that we expected. So then we had to do something about the ceilings because everything looked orange. So anyway, so we painted the ceiling. We compromised. We said, all right, you don't have to tear up the whole floor or restain it. We'll paint the ceiling. So we painted the ceilings and everybody's good. And then something else went wrong, right? And we're like, okay. So we're meeting them halfway, but he was always there. I mean, he was always, okay, I'll make it good. I'll fix this. He was always there. And we know, you know, we did the one in 2006 and he was there. He's never, you know, his workmanship was guaranteed and he was back and had his guys fixing stuff even well after the warranty was over.
And yeah, that's important.
That's the kind of guy. And now I pay him more. I said, he's more expensive. He said, I'm not more expensive. He is more expensive, but I don't care because I've had other contractors and it's a freaking nightmare. You're either arguing with them or they're doing shoddy work.
Right.
And I will not accept either. Right. So what you have to say is this. Look, you know, as a contractor, you're going to have clients that are great to work with. Right. And I, as a financial advisor, know that there's clients that I know are great to work with. They just want things done right. Right. They're willing to pay a little more in order to have things done right. I'm your guy. If you want to worry because you hired the low bidder, congratulations. That's the way you may want to work for the rest of your life, but you're always going to have problems. Always. With me, we'll have some problems, but I'll get them fixed. Okay. And that's just a different mindset. My brother hires the low cost, you know, the low bidder.
Yeah.
Always. And he's constantly in battles. And I'm never in battles. I refuse to be in battles.
Yeah. Life's too short.
And so you just kind of make a deal with the people. Who are you? Do you hire people that do a great job on your lawn or do you hire the cheapest person for your lawn? And that's really what you ask. When you get your house painted, do you paint the house with the cheapest people, the cheapest paint, or do you hire the person that's going to do the best job?
Yeah. Yeah, that's like, our landscape guy that does all kinds of other stuff too. He does tree trimming and everything else. A couple years ago when we had the trees trimmed, I actually had him bid the job and I got two other bids. And I wanted to do it with him anyway, but I was just keeping him honest. I didn't ever show him other bids. And both the other bids were significant. One was double his price and the other one was about 40% higher. So obviously I went with him, not because of the cheapest price, but because, hey, he was treating fair. And this time we had to get him done and I didn't even ask him for a bid. I said, hey, would you trim my trees? And he said, yeah. And I told Shelly, I said, I don't know how much you're going to charge me, but I'm sure, you know, we had the kind of relationship that if I didn't feel it was fair, I'd go talk to him. And it was very fair. I was like, I'm happy, you know.
Right. You got a person you can trust.
Right. I know he's going to take care of
it. The people across the street, not that they're grass, but the people across the street, we wouldn't even, they would say, who did your roof or who did this? We'd say, you know, he's really, really busy. He said he has absolutely no time because we wouldn't refer anybody to them.
Yeah.
People would come back to us. I mean, we did like want Woody. We sent our lawn guy over there. He said, Rob, I'm sorry. I can't work for them. Right? Nickel dime, beat the hell out of them, not treat them with respect. I mean, and now the people, we were not close friends with them, but.
Right.
We were respectable friends.
Sure.
But no vacations. You know. So it's just a question of who do you want as your clientele? Somebody that's going to question you all the time or somebody that trusts you and goes.
That's right. Yeah.
So, you know, just keep plowing ahead, finding those. You know, givers, right? People that give, but are trusting people, not people that are, that don't trust anybody. Ugh. Life's too short.
Amen. Completely agree.
All right.
Well, thanks for input. Appreciate you.
Here's where, let's leave it at this between us. I'm happy to respond immediately to you. If you lose a case, save that for this conversation. Okay. If you have a case where you're in the process of trying to win it and you need my help, count me in. Okay.
Well, and maybe I didn't better define. That's kind of what I felt like. I felt like, so like this one, I felt like there was hope to regain. Like, does that make sense?
And I had written it off.
Yeah. So it was a miscommunication part. There was one other, thing.
You said, I got to know. And to me, if you got to know, that's usually no. But in your case, you were good about going back and trying to win the case, which I think is a good exercise. But I'd rather be used in a case where, like we did with the other guy.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, that actually prompted my memory about one quick thing. So I've researched it. On the two different types of executive plan, and I present it to him, you know, and that's good. The downside, because it's a nonprofit, we can do a deferred comp, but nobody, the company doesn't pay the taxes or the insurance or the, you know, the social security or taxes or anything. He's responsible the year it comes vested. So when he retires at 70, the whole thing becomes immediately taxable to him, just like a salary that year. And so about
the whole thing.
The whole thing. And so like,
you take it over a 10 year period or something.
So the whole thing, about half of it gets whacked for taxes, right? So he loses about half of the whole thing that we built up. There is an option to do either a VUL deferred comp or there's a UL deferred comp that you can do and it won't build up as much. Let's say that we're going to, in the deferred comp, we're going to do like 2 million over that period. And let's say that the UL would get like between 1.5 million to 1.7 million. But the UL, you could borrow the money out each year from age 70 and never have to pay all the big income taxes. So what are your thoughts? You have any thoughts about that?
It's a math. That becomes a math game.
That's what I think.
Yeah, it's just a math game.
Yeah. The two unknowns are, you know, returns.
Right. But just assume a 7% rate of return and no more than that. And just do the math.
Okay.
And then
So I'm in agreement. If it's a case like the reason I was kind of having this one is there's a really good relationship fit, and I don't always go back and try. And it was kind of surprising to me because it was surprising to me that they didn't, that they left a message at 6:30 in the morning saying the wife saying, hey,
so I would go back to him with that and just say, you know, I just feel like this is such a good relationship fit.
Right. Okay. And that's the reason I've renewed. Yeah.
And I mean, just see the passion that you just said is different than the passion that you just explained earlier.
Okay.
So when you go back to him, it isn't just, I need to know this so I can pass it on to my team and then we can get better. You're a little frustrated that you just thought this was a great relationship. We hit it off. Yes. And I just feel like, you know, it shouldn't be, the economics shouldn't stand, you know, or the false economics shouldn't stand in the way of us having a good relationship.
Okay. All right.
Sounds good. That wasn't clear to me either. I thought you were done. I thought you were just like, what do you think I did wrong? I said, well, we'll talk about that when we meet.
Yeah, no worries.
Okay.
I agree with that statement. If it's just your analysis, yes.
Yeah.
And, hey, when you respond to the other email, if you have any other fly fishing places that you like, I know you mentioned that one place is kind of pricey. I don't know if you had one that was still expensive, but maybe
this
not.
Is an interesting, this is another one of those stories.
Yeah.
This place is world class, but it doesn't mean it's world class in price. It's world class in, I mean, yes, it's probably expensive. I don't know.
I checked it out. Yeah.
But the point is that you will never ever have a better experience.
What's the name of that book?
Three Rivers Ranch. So you go in, you close your eyes, you write the check, and you don't look. But your guides are going to be the best guides in the world. The rivers are the best. Everything is the best. The food is the best. The place you sleep is the best. I mean, it's just great. And it's not, you know, it's not Ritz-Carlton, but it's
right.
Just really well done with people that are terrific. And you want to go back every year after that. So if you want a great experience where you don't have to worry, this is it. And as far as I'm concerned, that's what I want.
Yes, I agree. All right, anything would be a good place to take my son, even though he doesn't know how to fly fish?
It's a perfect place. Okay. I took my daughter and she had no clue and she loved it.
Okay.
We had a father-daughter trip there. It was awesome. World class.
Okay. That's good enough for me.
Kind of like the contractor thing.
That's right. No, I'm saying it's good enough for me. I mean, we're on the same philosophy. You know, a wealthy Brandon client, he's now in heaven, but he used to say, Preston, it only costs a little more to go first class.
It's true. And it's like it only takes a little more effort to get an A. By the way, when you're working with your kids and you're thinking about, you know, how do you convince them to try and get an A versus a B?
Yeah.
I thought about this. My granddaughter is really good at puzzles. And I said, an A is just a complete puzzle.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
Right? And if you get a B, there's a piece missing. And all you have to do is go into the teacher and say, what is the piece missing from my puzzle to get an A? I'd like to get the A. Right? Everybody can do puzzles and everybody understands that puzzle pieces are missing.
That's right. That makes
sense. I like that.
I like that too.
It makes it simpler instead of this complex thing about getting an A.
No, I'm all for simplicity.
It just all requires it's just a puzzle that requires different pieces. If I was a teacher, that's what I would teach.
Well, in a way, we're both teachers.
We
get paid a lot more.
I always said that. I would have been a kindergarten teacher if I didn't do what I do. I get paid a lot more when I do this.
That's right. All right. Thanks, Rob. Appreciate you.
See you later.
Bye-bye. All right. See you soon. Bye.